The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
We will now have an ancient reading from Ecclesiastes, chapter 3, verses 1 through 8, from a translation by Rabbi Rami Shapiro. Everything in this world has its moment, a season of ripening and falling away, moments of birthing and moments of dying, moments of planting and moments of reaping, moments of killing and moments of healing, moments of demolition and moments of building, moments of weeping and moments of laughing, moments of mourning and moments of dancing, moments of scattering stones and moments of gathering stones, moments of embracing and moments of distance, moments of seeking and moments of losing, moments of clinging and moments of releasing, moments of tearing and moments of mending, moments of silence and moments of talking, moments of loving and moments of hating, moments of warring and moments of peacemaking.
So I want to invite you now into a visual reflection. In a moment or so, you're going to be able to view a video of a renowned surfer, Mark Parsons. And in this video, he happens to ride a rogue wave that's almost 70 feet high. I want you to know right now, it all turns out okay and he survives. But this time, by many, is being described as a time of riding a wave together. So I want us to use this visual reflection as a time to ask ourselves, what does it take to ride a wave? What is it that you must do as you dance on a wave and ride it to its conclusion? And what is it that you must not do in order to ride that wave? So let's view this video together, playing that video and reflecting on that. Perhaps you realize that in riding a wave, one of the things that you must not do is panic. Another thing is that you have to kind of let go a little bit and allow yourself to be carried by the rhythm of the wave. And another thing is to ground yourself. So let's take a moment now to ground ourselves in a time for prayerful meditation. Spiritual teachers across many traditions have often invited us into what is called a liminal space, a time in between, a time in which we pause and intentionally go deeper. The contemporary religious writer Richard Rohr says, it's no surprise then that we genuinely avoid liminal space and liminal time. Much of the work, however, of authentic spirituality and human development is to get people to go to that place in between, that place of pause, that liminal space. So during this prayerful meditation, let's begin to pay soft attention to our own breathing as it's already occurring within us. Don't change your breathing, alter your breathing in any way. Just pay attention to your in-breaths and your out-breaths. Maybe breathing in slowly and breathing out more slow than you usually do. So attend now to your in-breath as it flows within your body, and attend to your out-breath as it flows out from your body. Take another breath like this, And then I'm going to ask you to pay attention to the pause between the in-breath and the out-breath. The natural pause that's always there. It's a subtle pause that we often pass over. Yet there is that moment before exhaling and that moment before inhaling in which there is a pause that's available to us. So as we continue to breathe, let's pay attention to those pauses between the in-breath and the out-breath, between the out-breath and the in-breath, and let's practice that together. That pause can oftentimes evade us because we're always primed to move on to the next thing. But the pause is always there. It's a liminal space, a liminal time that is available to us. And now let's practice this same kind of finding the pause as we pay attention to the pause between our thoughts. Let's see if we can do that for just a little bit. So as one thought is arising, see if you can find the pause before the next thought comes to replace it. So the pause that's always there between our in-breath and our out-breath, between one thought and another, is there to welcome us sometimes into a deeper place where creativity can occur, where our creative response can occur. That pause sometimes requires that we slow down our body-mind so that we might discover that deeper place within, so that we might find a rhythm that sustains us and upholds us. So may it be. Let's stay with that as we now listen to our musical meditation that Isaac has prepared for us. So glad that even though we are not meeting in our building, that we're still gathering together during this time, and we get to still appreciate the voices and the sights of our members and visitors. And we also get to hear the music that's been provided for us for these services. So I feel a gratefulness for that. Earlier this month in my sermon on moving from what is to what's next, to so what, to what's next, I focused mostly on the ways of using this time of the pandemic to turning within without tuning out, to using this time to not put our lives on hold until this is all over, but to attend to what wants to happen in our lives even now. Today, I'm going to focus on our collective use of this time in between. After all, we are not going through this alone. We are going through this together as a global community. In truth, this is not some final episode of Survivor, the TV series, where the person who endures all the trials to the end is the victor, and others are sent home. Well, we're already home. Surely, we do, each of us, need to take care of our own well-being. And at the same time, this pandemic has made it very clear that our well-being is intricately connected and realistically connected with one another. The truth of our interdependency has never been clearer to us. An image that occurs to me again and again these days comes from Hindu and Buddhist mythology. It's the image that's often referred to as Indra's net. Maybe you've heard of it. So I want to share how one writer captures this image. And as I do so, allow yourself to imagine this image in your own mind's eye. So there is a wonderful net which has been hung by some cunning creator in such a manner that it stretches out infinitely in all directions. The creator has hung a single glittering jewel in each eye of the net. And since the net itself is infinite in dimension, the jewels are infinite in number. There hang the jewels, glittering like stars in the first magnitude, a wonderful sight to behold. If we now arbitrarily select one of these jewels for inspection and look closely at it, we will discover that in its polished surface, there are reflected all the other jewels in the net, infinite in number. Not only that, but each of the jewels reflected in this one jewel is also reflected in all the other jewels, so that there is an infinite reflecting process occurring. Let's stay with that image for just a moment. As with most mythical rendering, the point is not to describe what's actually happening, what's actually going on, but to instead sense something about our world through this image. The image captures the mystic sensibility that translates across many cultures, across many religious traditions. It's present in the artist's creative eye and the scientist's imaginative mind. It is sensed by scholars and even by ordinary folks because of the pervasiveness of this sensibility of our essential interconnectedness. This experience has been called the perennial wisdom. While some may interpret the mystic sensibility as mere fantasy, others know it as the very foundation of their experience of life. At this juncture, social scientists, ecologists, religious teachers, and philosophers, the average Jane and the plainest Joe, seem to understand what in our hearts we always knew, that we have the capacity to feel and to sense our interconnectedness. We have the capacity to see within the single polished surface of one jewel all the other jewels in the net. We sense in our heart what our bifurcated and stratified culture would have us deny, that our welfare is linked to the welfare of others. It didn't take a pandemic to teach us this, but it has taken a pandemic to remind us that indeed, we are connected. What impacts you impacts me. Your suffering is shared by my suffering as well. And we share this sense of connectedness with one another. This sensibility is captured in the singing of the Living Tradition hymnal, our UU hymnal, in this verse: "For the joy of ear and eye, for the heart and mind's delight, for the mystic harmony linking sense to sound and sight." And so this is not just a moment in our individual lives. This is an historic moment. This is not just a pause in our own lives, in our own individual routines. This is a pause in our global community. This is one of the challenges for me now in an online worship, because I'd like to get a response to you to this question, but take a moment anyway and respond in the room that you're sitting in alone or with others. Take a moment and pause right now and think about this. What did you know needed healing in this world, even before the pandemic? Even before this pandemic caused everything to come to a halt, for us to isolate and to reorient our lives around the world, what was it that you were aware of and knew that needed healing in our world? Say it out loud even while you're in the mute mode. I've been practicing my lip reading in the meantime. What is it that you knew needed healing in our world even before this pandemic? Perhaps you've said our economic disparity, our climate crisis, our healthcare system, the misery that some have felt in their day-to-day work, the exploitation of others because of their perceived lower status, our hurriedness that blocks out the wonders of life and the gifts of our cherished relationships, the vulnerability of any of us, and for of some of us more than others. Indeed, there's a lot of healing that is needed in our world. And these have been now exposed to us. And with all that healing that is needed, getting back to normal can't merely mean returning to what we know was not working. Just as pauses are hard in the individual level, pauses are hard on the collective level as well. We would rather return to some conception of normal rather than abide in this liminal time, rather than stay in this time and begin to sense what needs changing and healing in this world that we share. As someone stated in one of our Matters of the Heart conversations a few weeks ago, after the sermon, she asked, "What is this normal that we want to return to?" And I say, rather than moving back to normal in symbolic ways that might provide some temporary solace, I believe we're being called back during this time of a collective pause to practice a broader prophetic imagination of what is and what can be. These verses by the poet Adrian Rich make more immediate sense to me now. She writes, "My heart is moved by all I cannot save. So much has been destroyed. I have to cast my lot with those who age after age, perversely, with no extraordinary power, reconstitute the world." We need to use this pause, I believe, for the greater human task of not just naming what needs healing, but actually beginning to find ways to heal it within ourselves and between ourselves and for the sake of our world. Perhaps now we can more fully understand our marching orders for this next decade. And I would begin with this plea: don't just reopen, reconstitute the world. After all, the earth cannot sustain our current exploitation of limited natural resources. The earth cannot sustain what has been called the industrial growth system that values profit for some over life for all. And even now, as we're hearing echoes of this ideology, urging us to get back to business, even if getting back to business may mean losing lives. The choice has never been clearer for us. Can we hear and discern that choice more clearly and more acutely in this moment? Do we have hearts that are open enough to really understand the choices before us? David Corton, the author, a former professor at Harvard Business School and a social activist, put the choice succinctly in this way: we will prosper in the pursuit of life, or we will perish in the pursuit of money. The choice is ours. Corton has said that what we are experiencing is an immune response on the part of the earth. Joanna Macy and others have called this time that we're in a great turning, a turning towards a life-sustaining and earth-honoring time, if we so choose. Paul Hawken has called this time a blessed unrest. So now that the lights have been turned on, I wonder if we can actually awaken to our need not just to hunker down in place, not just to social distance, not just to wear masks, but also to unmask some of the illusions that we have been under about what normal is. Since this intense period of this global pandemic, I've recognized in myself and others I've talked to have also recognized that they have a hard time sleeping through the night. I've been waking up most nights and in the middle of the night realizing what it was that I was holding in my heart. The sorrow that I feel for our world, the pain that I know is in the lives of those who are losing loved ones and cannot find a way to grieve as usual. The uncertainty that surrounds us, this personal cloud of unknowing, was at first quite a nuisance because I realized I needed my sleep. I felt annoyed and I felt perturbed by this disruption in the night. And maybe some of you have had similar kinds of experiences. But then over time, I've learned to feel both annoyed, but also to embrace this time in the middle of the night. I came to this realization one night when I just blurted out within myself, "I'm awake." And then I realized, well, that's the point, to be awake during this time. I recognized that during the day I'd put on hold my emotions, my despair, my sorrow, my anxiety in order to get things done, in order to keep on keeping on, in order to be there for others. But gradually, I came to realize that this awake time in the middle of the night is when these feelings could come to the surface. These feelings of anxiety, our sorrow, no longer needed to be suppressed. This awake time was a liminal time, an in-between time in which the deeper experiences can occur. I didn't or couldn't do anything with these feelings in the middle of the night, and that's the point. I could just be with them. Now, not that we all need to lose sleep, but I believe that we are all called now to awaken. I believe that we need to practice staying awake because we are in a time of collective trauma. Let me explain. The signs of collective trauma include these, and perhaps as I go through this, maybe you can just do your own sort of reflection on which of these, if any, define you at this point. One symptom of collective trauma that I identify so readily with is hyperactivation. This is keeping ourselves busy so that we don't need to feel. Another symptom is numbness, like turning off our feelings because it's so overwhelming and there's nothing immediately that we could do. Another symptom is disembodiment, not allowing ourselves to sense what's going on in our body and holding tensions and fears there and not sensing when those tensions and fears have begun to build up within our own body. And instead, we separate ourselves from those sensations. Another symptom is relational disconnect, trying not to think about loved ones who may be suffering at home alone, not trying to think about those who are suffering or ill because it's just too much to take in, or discovering that our relationships are shifting in some way as we're spending more time with one another and we can decide to connect or to disconnect. The lack of self-control. I'm not going to ask for a raise of hands at this point, but sometimes that could take the form of overeating. I had a friend, a colleague, who recently told me that she's really been making a practice to eat bags and bags of Cheetos every evening. I don't know if she meant every evening, but over the course of a week. Or maybe our lack of control is just indulging in news all the time, or not being able to focus, or the inability to manage the speed and the complexity of all the data that's coming towards us from multiple forms of media. So we get into a kind of a drone zone. Many of us are finding it hard to process in real time the anxieties, the fears, the stress that's occurring. So we freeze, we disassociate, we get overactive, we focus on non-essential things. So it's often because of these ways of numbing and freezing and distracting and disassociating that we don't recognize the collective trauma that we are all in at this moment. This is why we often hear about post-traumatic syndrome, because we don't process our experience while we are going through them. But yet, my friends, if we can dare to be awake more fully now, we can then also begin to cultivate the world that wants to emerge from this emergency. Rather than from a half-awake self or a numbed spirit, we need to gather like this. We need to have conversations that matter. We need to uphold to one another the deep truths from ancient text, the subtle sympathies and understandings that can come to us through music and song. We need to not retreat, but to reconstitute our world each day intentionally. So let's remind each other right now. Just like turn to the person next to you or pick someone on the screen and say to them at the count of three, stay awake. So one, two, three, stay awake. Let's remind each other that during this time of collective trauma, it's so easy to fall asleep, to disassociate, to move into a drone zone, and to not pay attention. But this is our spiritual task right now. It's to stay awake and to awaken to some deeper understandings of who we are and what our role in the world can be and what kind of world we truly desire. It's up to each of us and to all of us together to reconstitute the world and to recognize that in order to do it, we need to stay fully awake in this moment. So, back to the surfer. We must ride the waves of our experiences as they're actually happening, which means not to panic, not to shut down, not to succumb to some false sense of normal as a sense that that would make us secure and everything all right. We must ride the wave of our experiences through the current grief and the anticipated grief. Through all the stages of grief, we need to know what we are losing, and we need to know as we ride that wave what we're willing to let go of as well. We need to cling to our own sense of integrity, our own sense of groundedness in the values that make us who we are, just as the surfer clings to the surfboard, so that we can be awake when we arrive upon the shore on the other side of this pandemic. We need to practice being awake, being attentive, being alive, feeling care, feeling concern, imagining a world that is better than the one that we thought was a normal world, and now we know was not normal for everyone. Our religion has always called us to care for others as if they were ourselves. Our religion has encouraged us to recite verses to ourselves, like this one from the abolitionist Unitarian minister Theodore Parker. Be ours a religion which like sunshine goes everywhere, its temple all space, its shrine the good heart, its creed all truth, its ritual works of love, its profession of faith divine living. This way of religion does not require a building to contain it or to sustain it. This way of religion is a way of living our life in the everyday so that we're bringing forth more love, more compassion, more truth, more concern into this world. We've sung verses to ourselves like this from our hymnal, here on the path of everyday, here on the common human way is all the stuff the gods would take to mold a heaven. We've had inscribed these words in our services and in our hearts. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve humankind in fellowship. Thus do we covenant. These are touchstones for us to stay awake, to stay alive, to stay caring, to stay compassionate, to not tune out, but to tune in, to hone our capacities even during this time of social isolation and distancing. It's not a time for retreat. This is not a time for self-absorption or self-isolation alone. This is not a time to succumb to the powers and principalities that would want us to rush towards some pretend normal. No, my friends, we are in this pause together, and let us use this pause fully so that we can feel blessed by the time we have taken, even in liminal time, to have a prophetic imagination, to cultivate our heart, to create the qualities that can carry us to the shore after this pandemic has gone. And so may we feel blessed by these words that we opened our worship with this morning. May this be an opening. May I be an opening. May we be an opening to love. And so as I ring this bell, listen to this bell as representing all that in our lives and in our world that are kind of calling us to wake up, to be awake, and to continue to awaken for the sake of ourselves, for the sake of those we care about, for the sake of those we do not know, for the sake of future generations. Let's hear this bell as a wake-up bell, and allow yourself to hear in your own heart what it is that wants to awaken. So we take time in each of our services